Translation. Having heard of the great fortune of Mother Yashoda, Parikshit Maharaj inquired from Shukadev Goswami, O learned Brahmana, Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukrinito sukritino arjun. Without sukriti or pious activities, no one can come to the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is approached by four kinds of pious men, ato jignasur atarati jnani cha. But here we see that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda surpassed all of them. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, what kind of pious activities did they perform in their past lives by which they achieved such a stage of perfection? Of course, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda are accepted as the father and mother of Krishna. Yet Mother Yashoda was more fortunate than Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father, because Nanda Maharaj was sometimes separated from Krishna, whereas Yashoda, Krishna's mother, was not separated from Krishna at any time. From Krishna's babyhood to his childhood, and from his childhood to his youth, Mother Yashoda was always in association with Krishna. Even when Krishna was grown up, he would go to Vrindavan and sit on the lap of Mother Yashoda. Therefore, there is no comparison to the fortune of Mother Yashoda. And Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, Yashoda cha mahabhaga. Sri Raju Vacha, Nanda kim akarod bhaman, Shriya evam mahodya. Yashoda cha mahabhaga, papo yashaha stanam harihi. Having heard of the great fortune of Mother Yashoda, Parikshit Maharaj inquired from Shukadev Goswami, O learned Brahmana, Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection and ecstatic love? Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Ummiritam Jina Tasmai Sri Guruve Nama. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pistaya Bhutale Simati Shivaram Swami Iti Namane. All glorious Srila Prabhupada. So, because the subject matter is about our beloved Mother Yashoda, I'm going to read the Mangalacharan prayers by His Holiness Shivaram Swami from his book Sri Damodara Janani, which I think you'll find interesting. It's very personal. And it will also be auspicious for me to do so. So Maharaj says, O goddess whose merciful glance is sought after by personified fame, honor, and reputation, whose spiritual wealth is unmatched by leading demigods, liberated souls, and perfected devotees, O Yashoda Devi, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. May the breeze created by this narration of your glories, carry my way a few particles of sparkling chintamani dust from your lotus feet. And may that dust fulfill my desire to serve your precocious son and his beloved in a very special way. While answering Parikshit Maharaj's question regarding how you came to be the mother of the Supreme Lord, the sage Shukdev was eager to exemplify his previously stated conclusion that the mercy the Lord bestowed upon you and your husband is greater than that received by almost any other devotee. Thus he diverged from the chronological description of Krishna's pastimes to cite an ancient narration that is distinct from everything that has been and would be spoken. O personification of maternal love, after seeing your reaction to Krishna displaying the universe in his mouth, Krishna's mind was full of astonishment. Your unalloyed love had hypnotized him. Although he tasted great pleasure from displaying affection for his devotees, the parental love you showed towards him was an even greater source of bliss. being the greedy child that he is, Krishna was eager to test the limit of that parental love, to know what it was like to be imprisoned in it, to feel what it was like to be bound by it. He who binds devotees with his ropes of love, his Niryogopash. Niryogopash is the cowherding ropes that Krishna and Balaram keep on their shoulders. So he who binds devotees with his ropes of love wanted to be bound by your ropes of love, your Vatsalya Prema Pash, O Divine Mother. Perceiving the Lord's thoughts and knowing that your good fortune is even greater than that of your kingly spouse, Krishna's pastime's potency scripted the Damodara Bandhana Leela and cast you in the leading role. Being in full agreement with this plan and in awe of your devotion, although he remains infinite without beginning or end, Krishna allowed you to tie him up for the insignificant offense of stealing yogurt and milk. By such submission, he displayed supreme perfection and completeness. O Mother, just see your son who, with the laws of karma and dharma, binds those engulfed in theft and anger and deceit and makes them cry. He has now become implicated in those same misdeeds himself and bound by your ropes. He now cries a river of false tears. Although he said nothing, King Parikshit was confused about the kind of sadhana you would have to practice to perfect such unprecedented maternal love. The story of Drona and Dara did not reveal any such extraordinary sadhana. Seeing his disciples' wonder, Shukadev Goswami eagerly proclaimed the ultimate philosophical conclusion in the verse Nayam Sukhapo Bhagavan. That verse proclaims that you are the eternal shelter of maternal love, of which Krishna is the eternal object. Were one to collect all the love of every mother from every son of every son in this universe, that aggregate would not compare to a mustard seed portion of your love for Krishna. It's hard to get the mind around that, isn't it? When you see the way that those babies, your little baby and the other baby comes in, we're all nuts about them. Then we see their mother sweep them up into their arms and kiss them again and again and again. And it says all of these combined in the whole of the universe doesn't keep even compared to a mustard seed of the love that Mother Yashoda has for Krishna. Thus Shukadeva Goswami explained to Parikshit Maharaj that you never performed any pious act to attain your good fortune. Rather, your good fortune is eternal, a feature of your divine identity. And although the king did not ask to hear this pastime, one that he had repeatedly heard since childhood, the merciful sage poured forth the nectar of Damodara Leela from his lotus mouth. Now Maharaj speaks about something, a personal prayer of his own. O Mother Yashoda, once during Parikram of Vrindavan, the instruction to glorify you came to me in a wonderful way. While meditating on that inspiration, it appeared to me that there was no pastime that so stunningly made known your control over the Supreme Lord as when you bound his belly on that Diwali day. Like a child who sets sail to cross the ocean in a raft, I begin this effort, writing this book, of praising your devotion with my paltry skills. Although my effort will no doubt fall short of success, I pray that the same divine mercy that enabled you to finally bind Krishna's belly will enable me to reach the far shores of my aspiration. Surely, every child desires the public veneration of their mother's qualities to be impeccable, and does everything in their power that it be so. Maybe a certain suckling prince whose cloud blue body is tarnished with dust, whose face is streaked with tears, whose belly is tied to a grinding mortar, but whose heart is overflowing with astonishment at his mother's love, enable me to succeed in this composition. So, Radha Damodara Ki Jai, see Mother Yashoda Damodara Ki Jai. So Maharaj writes really nicely. I don't know if any of you have read that book, but it's so nice. And it came out just before Kartik, so that we could... Maharaj did it purposely so that we could relish Kartik months in a very wonderful and deep way. So here in the translation, we see that it's been asked, it's been inquiring about what Drona and Dara did. Indeed, what actually Devaki and Nandana did to receive these kind of blessings, this kind of intense love and attachment to the Lord in such an extreme way. And we understand by our scriptures and also things that Maharaj has written and everything that's been written in the Bhagavatam, that Drona and Dara, later becoming Yashoda and Nandana, they were demigods who did some very nice service in Swarga, and they received blessings from Brahma. They asked Lord Brahma to bless them, to have the Supreme Personality of God as their child. And so that came to be, as we know. They became Nanda and Yashoda when the Lord came as Krishna. But that doesn't mean that Drona and Dara are the source of Nanda and Yashoda. Nanda and Yashoda are eternal characters, eternal family members. But their counterholes or their expansions, Drona and Dara, performed those austerities and those prayers and those sacrifices to gain that position. So actually, when Yashoda and Nandana are involved in this incredible pastimes of Krishna's Prakat Leela, Drona and Dara actually enter into them. So they're, if you like, multiple incarnations. This is not an unusual thing. And similarly, Devaki and Vasudev, they performed sacrifices, and they also were very fortunate to receive a boon that they could receive the Lord as their child. And in their pastime as Sutapa and Prishni, they had the Lord Prishni Garb came as their son. And then later, again, they were, who were they after that? They were Prishni and Sutapa. Then they were Kashyapa and Aditi. And does anyone know who their son was? Vamanadev. And then, of course, became Yashoda and Nandana and had Vasudev Krishna as their son. So these incredible personalities, Drona and Dara and Prishni and Sutapa, aka Kasyapa Aditi, Vasudev and became Vasudev and Devaki, also entered into the bodies of Vasudev and Devaki to enjoy the bliss of being parents to the Supreme Lord. So they are an eternal fixture of Krishna's. Whenever Krishna appears in his pastime, in his leelas, so they are there, both in the aprakata and the prakata leelas. This Prabhupada said, oh yes. So now coming back to us, without Sukriti or pious activities, no one can come to the show. So it's slightly different for us. We're not eternal associates. We're something else. You know, we're at the bottom of the ladder, so to speak. But it's possible by following the path of bhakti yoga, following the process of bhakti yoga, and also of following the residents of Vrindavan, one or another that may catch our fancy, we can slowly but surely climb up that ramp, that insurmountable ramp, to the heady, giddy heights of Goloka Vrindavan, the top of the spiritual world. And we can also do that in one lifetime. So I wanted to say before I speak about the four different types of men Krishna, the Prabhupada mentions, who qualify and unqualify for Krishna, I wanted to just make a point about Yashoda. And that is that, I don't know, this is just my sort of realization, and it may be speculation, but does anyone realize that there is actually someone else who is equally loved by Yashoda as Krishna? And I'm not even speaking about Balaram here. Can anyone guess? Radharani. Thank you, Adi. So Radharani is that person. So I'm going to again take a liberty with my stuff and just, I've written something about Yashoda and Radha, because you rarely hear about Yashoda's love for Radharani and how it's intense as Krishna's love. I wrote a song, but there won't be time for the song. So I'm just going to say the poetry. Please forgive me if I'm indulging myself here, but listen to Yashoda's love for her. I've taken Maharaj's words and just put them into poetry. Following Krishna's breakfast feast cooked by the hands of Gauri, Ma Yashoda calls, "My dear, please come, beloved Gauri." Radha and her gopi friends to her apartment went, where Ma Yashoda sat her down to dress and ornament. And then the chorus goes, "Radha, my dear, gold as the sun, Radha, my precious one." So it's interspersed by choruses like that. The girl she loves as much as Shyam, the daughter she adores, regretting that she'd never be her daughter-in-law. And in this mood of deepest love, she braided Gauri's tresses, and tying Radha's curling locks, she joyously caresses, "Radha, my dear, gold like the sun, Radha, my precious one." Fresh vermilion on her head, within her sacred part, perchance to dream that her blue sun could sit within her heart. But Yogamaya's mystic hoax makes mother unaware that Shyam's hand in loving strokes will grace her kumkumed hair. She places tilak on her head, as gold belongs to gold. And as she applies collyrium, she steps back to behold. You know, when you do something nice, you're looking back to say, "Oh, isn't that nice?" To marvel at her artistry, and quickly carries on, replacing Radha's nose ring with a pearl that is her own. The dot of musk on Radha's chin is expertly replaced, resembling remarkably the favored resting place of a bumblebee delighted to have found its lotus joy, unaware her son awaits that pastime to employ. As Radha meekly bows her head, Yashoda takes her dress, replacing her simple garment with clothing clean and fresh. She's just been cooking. A new blouse is the first to greet her form with no compare. And then a sari colored blue enwraps her form so rare. A blushing face, Sri Radha hopes Yashoda will not guess that Shyam is her remembrance by the color of that dress. So when Radharani wears blue, she can't help but, of course she can't help but think of him anyway, but it increases her remembrance of Krishna. And Radha then imagines that Yashoda has detected the rising heat within her form is to her son connected. So Radha's getting embarrassed now. She's seen the blue sari, and that she's thinking of Krishna, and she's worried that Mother Yashoda might know that it's connected, her heat that's rising is connected to him. To counteract her burning form, Yashoda fans her sweetly and daubs her body with sandalwood, applying it so neatly. A diamond necklace gifted next at Ma Yashoda's hand, upon Sri Radha's graceful neck, the best in Braja land. And from the jeweled ornaments, like many suns that shine, bangles made from ivory then grace her wrist divine. And on her vine-like arms, well-placed, jeweled armlets shimmering, and then an orb-like ring, love-laced, upon her finger glimmering. Upon a string that Ma had tied, I'd strung black pearl and gopal ties. Sorry, coral ties. She frames her forehead expertly as joyously she sighs. Just imagine, you can just, she's looking at all this beautiful work she's doing on her, and she's standing back, and every now and again she just sighs with the beauty of this girl that she's adorning. Moving behind Varshana's treasure, Yashoda takes her braid and decorates her hair with pins from gold and diamonds made. Then to Radha's front she comes and gently tilts her chin. In concentrated bliss she sets some tiny flowers in. Her lustrous hair so dark and long and gloriously dear, and tucks a yellow champak flower sweetly on each ear. Radha, my dear, gold like the sun. Radha, my precious one. So, Mother Yashoda is the embodiment of love and her paternal love for Krishna and also for Radha knows no bounds. And you get just some small idea of how sweetly and how expertly she does things. You know, maybe we don't get such an idea when she's, you know, doing the cooking and stuff like that. You know, anyone can cook. You know, there's loads of good cooks in the movement. So we see her doing this and doing that. But when you hear the deft and perfect way that she's dressing the source of the goddess of fortune, how can you gild the lily? But she does. And she's so wonderful. So I just wanted to say a little bit about that. If anybody wants a copy of that song, I can email it to them. I've got it at home. Stated in Bhagavad Gita Chaturbhuja, without Sukriti or pious activities, no one can come to the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're creating those good qualities in ourselves now. We're creating those credits by which eventually, somehow or other, inconceivably, we'll reach that goal. Prabhupada says, four kinds of pious men, atato, jignasura, atati, gyanicha. So, I remember years ago writing the Bhagavad Gita opera, I learned a lot of the lines from Bhagavad Gita, for the shlokas, or I expressed them in a poetic way because I couldn't get them to rhyme. And I remember this song, and I remember fitting into the four kinds of men who didn't get Krishna. So I'm trying to sort of slowly move over to that, to the one who wants Krishna, for the four kinds of men. Can you remember the four kinds of men who approach Krishna? One is in distress, seeker of wealth, inquisitive, and the seeker of truth. Yeah, the seeker of the supreme truth, yes. So I'd like to say I was the seeker of the supreme truth. I doubt it. But the song went, and the four who will not come, first are the proud ones, second the demons, third the great fools, and fourth the lowest of humans. And I was thinking, oh my goodness. The chorus was, four kinds of men surrender to me, and four kinds of men do not. Those who surrender come home easily, and those who do not. So I was kind of learning the Bhagavad Gita in my strange Jayadev style. That was in 1984. And then I wrote it. I wrote the 10th and 11th chapters and met the devotees later. I got a Bhagavad Gita from the jumble sale. A friend of mine bought it for 10p for me. So, you know, sometimes you think, oh, you know, that person didn't want the book. They took it, but it didn't. But someone didn't want it, but someone else did, you know. So I read it and I wrote the 10th and 11th chapters and got to know the devotees. I was living in London in the late 60s and living in Soho Street, And I then just after that, I started my a career as a singer with a friend of mine called Alan, who later became the lead singer of the Rubettes. And I remember coming out of Air Studios, which is owned by George Martin, the Beatles producer, and Ron, I think his name was Ron Hubbard, and we were in there. Roxy Music was in one room, the Hollies were in another, and we were in there doing Jukebox Jive, which is our third hit. And I remember coming out, and this was later than 69, this was 74. I remember seeing the Devotees. I'd seen them once or twice before. Wasn't so kind of enamored by, you know, some of the ways they were. It was just my stuff. But I remember thinking, my God, I think it was all brahmacharis in that day. And they came around the corner, they swept around the corner singing Hare Krishna. And I knew that they were very profound. This is a very profound thing. I couldn't quite work out how it had anything to do with me. But I could see that these people were extremely, they were onto something, which I wasn't onto. But I was onto, you know, being famous. And so I continued. I lived in the West End for some time. Then I got married and then I became successful. But I remember that I wrote a song also about Prabhupada called I Never Knew You. I was living in Old Compton Street. In the West End, very near to Berry Place. And even in that time that I was living there, still somehow I never bumped into the devotees and I didn't bump into Prabhupada, which was obviously it wasn't meant to be for me. And I wrote a song called I Never Knew You. It was, I lived up in Soho, above the Two Eyes Coffee Bar. Two Eyes Coffee Bar was the place where rock and roll started in England. It's like a historical place. You'll see, if you go past it now, there's a, it didn't say Jayadev lived here. It says, rock and roll started here late 50s. So by the time I got there, it was just a coffee bar. It wasn't a rock and roll place anymore, which is in a basement. And then above that were two circus midgets called Trixie and Reg or something. It's a really weird place. And then above that was Sky High Lee, the wrestler, an American wrestler who's about 7 foot tall. And then above that was some strippers or a prostitute. And the weirdest of all was above that was me, John Richardson. So that's where I lived. And I still never met the divorce. I lived up in Soho above the Two Eyes Coffee Bar. Oh, it's amazing how low you need to go, learning how to be a star. I was in up for my ego, for all I was worth, while you were raising old London town from the groin of the earth. So I said Prabhupada was raising London town from the groin of the earth while I was doing this. And then the chorus was, I never knew you, guess you all know why, but I think I can see you in your children's eyes. And he goes, Hare Krishna. Then he goes, Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Londonishwara ki jai. Sri Krishna lifted up Govardhan with his lotus left hand, but you lifted up the whole wide world by your Guru Maharaj's command. Three flights up and two blocks away was the nearest to you I'd get. So near but so far away, and it's taken me this long to feel some regret. So I wrote songs later like that about that time. So it was an amazing time. It was a time when I thought that by becoming rich and famous, you were going to be happy, and sincerely believed that. When that happened, it was a big shock. After a year, I said to my wife, this is weird, I'm not happy. We've got all this. I'm recognized on the street. All this stuff was going on. And I started to dislike being recognized. Can you imagine? The fool's ego. I started to dislike it, thinking it was just driving me nuts. One time we just finished, it was Christmas, we'd just flown home in our private plane. Alan had his own plane. We flew home to Southend Airport. Next morning, Sachi said to me, it's Christmas Eve, come on, we've got to go shopping. So I thought, oh no, I didn't have a wash, I was too tired. I just put a double coat on and pulled over the thing over the top of my head. And we went to Woolworths or something in Romford. And I'm, you know, following Sachi around, buying this and buying that. And we looked in this freezer. There was this freezer opened up. And Sachi's looking in there. And I'm just sort of looking in there, pretending I'm sort of interested. And then a couple of the people who work in there, one of them kind of, and I thought, oh no. And they said, oh, it's one of the Rouvettes. You know, it's like that. You know, it's, oh no, this stuff is driving me nuts. What's it about? You know, I'm just a rascal. And so started to really look for coming out away from the four kinds of men who don't surrender to the four kinds of men who do. So we started having, I opened up our house and we started having all these different people come from all over the country and sometimes around the world, giving lectures on spiritual life, chakra reading, aura readings, and palm readings, and all this stuff. And slowly, bit by bit, was getting more and more interested in the answers. Then on the road, I read the Gideon Bible, and I got a lot from that. And I used to read the Bible everywhere I went. Then we traveled in a limousine together. And I started to drive the other guys mad by telling them about, you know, Jesus and stuff like that. And I thought, wow, this guy's gone nuts, you know, from, you know, sex, drugs and rock and roll to, you know, reading the Bible. What's his problem? And slowly, bit by bit, you know, I was thinking, hey, this is the path for me. But I'd been to a few churches and I'd seen a few Christians and they didn't interest me. They interested me, but it just didn't seem like the kind of right of approach, you know, and it didn't answer all the questions, such as, why do people suffer if God loves us equally? You know, why do people suffer? Why does that boy and brother and sister have different, you know, different experiences with God's hands? Why? Oh, it's the sins of the parents. But why on one child and not another? Couldn't quite understand it. So I prayed, my dear Lord, please send me a nice Christian who can explain all this to me. And then, you know, I'll surrender to you. And a couple of nights later, this old Indian man knocked on my door. I understand you are looking for God. Yeah, who are you? I'm your next door neighbor, Mr. Sharma. So this Indian man came in and by that time I was doing healing and helping people. I thought, well, I don't know who God is, but I'm sure that he'd be very pleased, at least, or if I looked after his children. So I learned how to massage reflexology in between touring. And I'm sorry that it sounds like it's a story of my life, but I'm afraid that's all I've got to tell you, really. So what happened was he came in and he said, so what is it that you're doing? So I was telling him, oh, I do massage, I do healing, I'm so advanced. I didn't say that, but I was thinking like that. And I help people, and I was talking for about 20 minutes. And then he went, can I speak? So I said, yes, please, please tell me. What do you want to say? So he said, what do you know about Rama and Krishna? I said, well, I've seen those mad Hare Krishnas on the street. I remember my very first encounter was with an Australian lady in the mid-70s. And she came up to me with a Back to Godhead. No, it might have been later than that because it was Jay Tirta's time. What would that have been, Mahashringa Prabhu? 79? Yeah, 79. So she came up to me with it was heavy duty character. She like kind of almost hit me in the stomach and stopped me, you know. Yeah? And she said, I don't know what she said, but I was thinking, God, who this person is so heavy. And she said, I want you to take one of these and give me a donation. And so I took gave a donation, and she opened the Back to Godhead, and there was a picture of Jay Tirta, who was just fallen down. And then she ripped out the picture of Jay Tirta. So you can imagine, I didn't know who he was. And I was thinking, this is bizarre. This person's almost assaulted me.
And then I, because I'm a kind-hearted person, I've put up with it and bought this blinking thing I don't want, really. And now she's ripped out one of the pages. So when I said to Mr. Sharma, you know, I met those mad Hare Krishnas, this is what I was talking about, you know. So he said, what do you know about Rama? I said, no, I don't know Hare Rama, that's it. And he went, and he got the Ramayana. And he spoke the Ramayana. I just couldn't believe it. It just like knocked me out. It just like hit me for six. And that was it. I was just, the life had changed in that second, just gone. The old life had gone, that was it. I was already a vegetarian, and some or other I'd also packed up drinking, or I was in the froze of doing that, so that went. And Mr. Sharma became our guru and initiated all the family. Siddhartha, my son, I think his name was Lakshman, and I think Grungi was some, Rohini was it? No, not Rohini, no, who's the submissive wife of Krishna? Rukmini, sorry, yeah. And Sachi, what were you, Sachi? Oh, you were Rukmini. That's a good one. Sachi. And Mr. Sharma used to try to... to do things, and she didn't trust him, so she wouldn't, you know, I'd say, if he said anything to me, I'd just jump to it and just do anything, you know. Yes, Mr. Sharma, yes, Mr. Sharma. I was fully surrendered, more than I am to, unfortunately, to Shiva Ramaswamy. So she would do that, and he'd say stuff to her, and she'd go, no, I'm not doing that, you do it. So he said something like, you know, he made me buy this big thing that you scrape spices on, a big stone. And he said, does Sachi do that? She said, no, I ain't doing it. So he sat in the corner and he was just like, you know, making these spices for cooking, and he was teaching us how to stuff like that. People would come in, my old friends, especially from the old days, you know, still they were still around at that point because they didn't know that I'd gone completely mad for Krishna. And they used to think, who is that slave you got in the kitchen there doing that thing? So it was a funny time. But slowly, bit by bit, Mr. Sharma kind of led us to devotees. And then I got the Bhagavad Gita and I wrote the 10th and 11th chapters and wanted to perform it in St. James's Church in Piccadilly. And I was Krishna. You can imagine the ugliest Krishna. Paravita Prabhu, who was here yesterday. He made me up as Blue Krishna, and Gurangi was, she was called Pia then, she was going to be Arjun, and then she saw how many lines she had to learn, so she didn't. She swapped places with Siddhartha, who felt sorry for me, and he became who became Arjun. And we performed it at St. James's Church in Piccadilly, but we didn't have costumes, so I went to Soho Street. I thought, oh, I don't want to go there, really, because, you know, they're nuts. And I had to go. And when I got there, I said, Haribo. And when I got there, I said to the temple president, look, I've got this Bhagavad Gita and I've written a rock opera around it, and we're going to perform it in St. James's Church in Piccadilly. Would you lend us the costumes? He said, yeah, I bet you speculated the hell out of it as well. And I thought, oh, okay, that's what that, you know, with that self-fulfilling prophecy when you expect something. So I went away, and then it was the day before and we still couldn't find costumes anywhere. So I went back again, and I had a cassette, you know, that's how far back it was. This is 84. I had a cassette player with a little, you know, the little
portable cassettes. And I said, please, I just want to ask you, just don't say anything. Just listen. And I hit the button and I sang the whole of the 10th and 11th chapter in you know, because I, obviously you've written it, you learned it. And at the end he's, he's very touched by it. And he said, okay, yeah, we'll give you costumes and we're going to come and film it. So there is a film run somewhere if you want a good laugh. And we had a packed audience, about 300 or 400 people upstairs and downstairs, and St. James's was packed. And that's when we got to know the devotees. I had prasadam afterwards as well. And Sachi said to me on the way back, this is the turning point in our life. This is it. I still wasn't sure because I've had my kind of funny dealings with the devotees. But slowly, bit by bit, we've come from those four kinds who don't to, you know, one kind who does. You know, I don't know quite what I'm searching for, I guess. I don't know if it's the absolute truth or I just want to get out of distress. I'm not quite sure. However, we're here now and we've been tolerated and loved and supported by so many people. Yesterday, I was talking to one of the beautiful ladies over here, and I was in, there was nowhere to sit with the boys in the prasadam, so there was a gap on the girl's side. So I just, well, I'm not attached, or perhaps I am attached, but I don't care. So I just went and sat down with the girls, and I was just sitting there, and next to me was my god sister from Hungary, and she said, Jayadev, where were you last night? At the kirtan here, you know, this wonderful kirtan we had. And I said, I was here till 10:30. She said, just after that, Guru Maharaj said, where's Jayadev? You want him to do the mantra choir? I thought, oh, no, just one of the rare time when my Guru Maharaj wants me to do something. And I'm gone. I felt so bad. And there was my prasad in front of me. I couldn't eat it. I completely lost my appetite. And then this beautiful lady said to me, what's your problem? And started sorting me out, you know, and said, look, you should eat it. If you're ill, then you can't eat it. But if you're not ill, then you should eat it. So after she went, my pride had dropped down and I started to eat it. I felt so bad. And the weirdest thing is, you know, I've been working on this thing about prayer. I do this every day. I do loads of prayers. And I'm trying to do this virtual choir, which requires people to film themselves, the part that I've sent them, and send it in to me. It's so hard to get it. Even my best friends say, yeah, Jayadev, I'll do it. And they don't do it. And it takes sometimes 2 years for me to get something like the Mahaprabhu one. Mahaprabhu one took us 2 years to do, that you saw at Gaurapaneem. And this one, I want 1,008 singers, and it's the Maha Mantra. So I can't go on the street and just say to people, like I did with the other one, just go, Mahaprabhu, okay, and got them. You know, I can't do that because I've got to learn the whole Maha Mantra and then I've got to learn it in this tune. And it's difficult. So I'm relying on devotees or whatever. So devotees don't do it. So yesterday I thought, big crowd, load of people here, but I can't disturb Maharaj's kirtan because there are all these incredibly qualified kirtanis and bhajaniers. Have you heard them? Did you hear them sing? Unbelievable. So great. I'm just sitting over here and Madhava Prabhu said, Jayadev, come over here, come and sit down with us. And I said, no, I felt like I couldn't, you know, I just wasn't, you know, I wasn't worthy. So I just sat there because I just want to chant and listen. So I'm chanting and listening. And I'm thinking, my goodness, this is so amazing. And then I thought Maharaj sang better than I'd ever heard him sing before. And it was just about 10:30. My backside was really hurting me. Sorry to say, in the Bhagavatam class. And I've been sitting I couldn't get up to dance because when they did get up to dance, it was like that. Everybody was like arms on the side and stuff. And I thought, I didn't want to add to that, you know, squeeze. Otherwise, I would have, because my bottom was saying, go on, have a go. I'd appreciate it. So I didn't. But I just sat there, and at 10:30, I thought, I've got to go. So I went out the door. But I'd prayed. please, Guru Maharaj, I don't want to ask you. I can ask you, but I don't want to ask you. Please, could you give me 15 minutes to do the mantra choir? And then I'm going to do the latest mantra choir and get someone to film it for us. And then I've got 200 people. Bang, just done. Fantastic. You know, I'm thinking like that. I can't ask him. Then I said to Krishna, Krishna, if you want to move into the heart of Maharaj, he's never asked me to do it before, except Radhastami in Hungary, and just ask him if I can do it and make it, then I'd be so... So, but I'm trying not to be attached, so I'll leave it at that. And Krishna answered my prayers, and I was out the door. I'd gone before it even happened. And when they told me, I felt sick. I couldn't eat my breakfast. I nearly cried, actually, because, you know, your guru asks you to do something, and you're not even there. And he had to call out a few times. What an inconvenience. And break his train of thought to fit me in. So I'm not really sure if I've moved from the four kinds of men who don't to the four kinds of men who do. But I'm asking for your blessings to do so. Hare Krishna. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna to everybody.